And on a Saturday, we went over and walked around, and all of the lodges were there showing their wares. And we walked up to a booth where the two gentlemen, it happened to be Wayne Gangler and his son Kenny, were the only two lodge owners that were wearing jackets and ties. And that was big with us. And they had a beautiful booth, and they had great pictures. So long and short of it, we made a decision to go. And our first trip, we left a little bit early. It was May of 1992. May is a little bit early. Mm-hmm. And we flew up to Winnipeg and then up to a small town, boarded uptown. It kind of reminded me of something out of a Stephen King novel called Lynn Lake. The weather was cold, sleet, snow, ice, and we get to the float plane base, and the bush pilots are arguing in front of us. And keep in mind, this was our first trip, and they said, we're not flying. We're not flying in this. A couple guys went out, flew, came back, and we're sitting there figuring, now, what's going to happen? One bush pilot said, I'm going to go. Let's go. I'll take you. And John and I and a few of the fellas jumped on and flew another 45 minutes to the lodge. This lodge was at Reindeer Lake, Wayne's first place. Reindeer Lake, to give you perspective, is about the size of New Jersey.
Wow.
You can be in the middle of this lake and not see shore on either side. And this is where most of us, myself particularly, learned how to fish. Beautiful big pike, walleye, lake trout, which you mostly troll for. And we fished at Reindeer Lake for a number of years. And then around, I guess it was 1997, Wayne came in and told us that he was going to move to Manitoba. It appeared that the future of fishing, sports fishing at Reindeer Lake, wasn't going to be that particularly good going forward. And in the winter, in the dead of winter, and the winters are severe up there, Wayne and Ken and his folks built a new lodge. If you've ever seen Ice Road Truckers, when the lakes freeze, mm-hmm. airplanes land, trucks go across these lakes. And we got to the new place in the first time in 1998, which is Gangler's North Seal River Lodge, and it was absolutely magnificent.
Now, why don't you describe what the lodge is like and what the accommodations are like?
Absolutely. The main building is where we had our meals. It's a gorgeous building. Wayne's got a terrific bar. He's got a gift shop, a tackle shop. He's got a fly tying table for those that like to fly fish. Some of us, my fly fishing isn't very artful, but eventually the fly lands in the water, and you do catch a fish.
Gravity does work.
And the dining room where we take our meals, and as you pointed out, Wayne always had a gourmet chef. It's 5-star meals. We take our breakfast and dinner at the lodge, and our lunch, which is really worth the experience, a shore lunch on the lake where the guides prepare a fish that we caught probably less than an hour ago and prepare it right on the lake in an old cast iron frying pan with the cold Labatt's Blue and the side order of potatoes and onions. It's the greatest experience going. So we always look forward to our shore lunch. Come back in the evening to a great dinner, as you pointed out.
And you're flying back.
And we're flying back. We're flying either on a de Havilland Beaver or a de Havilland Otter, twin-engine Otter.
I've actually flown on de Havilland Otters.
They're terrific airplanes. They're like the Ford pickup truck of Canada. And after dinner, we have our group, which we normally take over the whole lodge. We share what went on during the day. And it's important because you then see patterns emerging as to which lures worked, what colors, what's changing as the week progresses, weather changes, wind, all of this affects fishing. And, of course, we have a pool. And we, throw in a few bucks each. And at the end of the week, whoever had the biggest fish of each species, wins that pool money. We also designated an award, and I want to talk about the guides, if I may.
Please.
For a few minutes.
We're very interested in the guides because I understand that many of the members of the Cree Nation, some of the first Canadians up there, work as guides, and they have their own traditions and skills and methods of fishing, and some of them are quite unique on what I understand to be a catch-and-release lake system.
It's a catch-and-release, you know, these folks are probably the original conservationists. We believe in catch and release because it ensures the future of sports fishing. Our guides are members of the Cree Nation. These are folks that we got to know so well. We got to know them. We got to know their children. We knew their families. Unfortunately, over the years, we saw we had a few of them pass away. There were a couple that were legends, and I know John Craner down there wants to hear me talk about Big Al, so I'm going to talk about Big Al.
So let's hear about Big Al. Why is Big Al a legend?
Well, Big Al is a legend for a lot of reasons, not all of which I can talk about on the radio, but Big Al was maybe, if he stood on his toes, was maybe 5'2", and he was the oldest. He was the elder, and he's the one everyone, they all looked up to him. He could do anything. The man, great fisherman. These guides will put you on fish. They can go to a lake that we've never been to before. They navigate by the wind, by the current, and they're going to find you fish. I've seen Al get out of a boat where maybe a motor failed or something happened, and put on his hip waders and pull a boat across the lake.
Wow.
Push the boat over rocks to get into a bay where we know there are fish and maybe the water is shallow. Probably the most resourceful person I've ever met up there. You know that you're in good hands with these folks because when you do a flyout, you land on a lake, you get into the boat, the plane takes off, and there you are on a lake that maybe no one's been on before. And you could be 50, 100 miles away from the lodge. You and another fisherman and a guide. And you're really at their, you're in their care, and they do take good care of you. Things can happen. Weather can turn. You can be on a flyout, and we've had a couple of close calls where we didn't think the planes would get back at 6 o'clock to get us, because the weather turned bad. And Al and these other guides are prepared to have you safely spend the night, if necessary, on the lake.
So they would actually have camping equipment and
not
places
really.
Like
they
that?
They can turn the boat over against a tree and make a lean-to.
Oh, that's great.
Take the floorboard out of the boat, make a lean-to. I've seen Al sharpen spikes of tree branches because there are bears. And we've seen bears. We've seen 600-700 pound cinnamon-colored brown bears come out of the woods. They're very quiet. You'll turn around and they'll be standing there looking at you.
And of course, they're not used to seeing people.
No,
which is another thing. Now, are there any grizzlies that far north?
Not grizzlies. These are mostly cinnamon-colored brown bears.
But there aren't any grizzlies that far
north.
No,
but these are huge. John and his grandson, John the Third. Came upon a moose that had walked into the bear's killing field, and the bear had just killed the calf, I guess you call it, and was up on his hind legs. And that's the signal to get out of there real quick.
Right.
So the guides will get
that's
you out of there real quick. And again, it takes me to the wildlife that you see there. Eagles, bears, moose, beaver, every animal that you can think of in that the nature up there is so magnificent. It's really indescribable. I saw a bear cub climb a tree to go after an eagle's nest, and the eagle mom came and scared that little bear cub down that tree so fast. And it was an afternoon when there was a thunderstorm, and I was with the other fishermen. We were looking for a place to hide from the storm. And we ruled out going on shore because the bear was sitting there. The mama bear was sitting there looking at us. So it's magnificent. It's the land of the midnight sun. You can take a picture outdoors at 10 o'clock at night without a flash. There's only a few hours of darkness at that time of year. And I have to say, and I've told this to Bill, I said this fishing trip You know, I'm making notes here. I made 12 pages of notes, but I'm not even looking at them. I don't need to. It's a life-changing experience.
Why is that?
Well, I never fished in my life. You know, when I was a kid, we went down to the – I grew up in Carteret. We went down to the pond with a safety pin on a piece of string and a little bread ball and tried to catch something. John and all the other fellas in this group taught me how to fish, and I absolutely love it. So just a wonderful experience to see fish this big. You know, I know a lot of folks that have never been up there who are sports fishermen who can't imagine a fish that's 49 inches long or a lake. I'll give you an example. One of the Cranert brothers, Uncle George, who unfortunately passed away about 2 years ago, George at age 86, sitting in the boat with a can of beer in one hand and his fishing rod in the other, caught the largest lake trout we ever had.
Wow.
A 46-inch lake trout.
Wow.
So as a sports fishing hobbyist, you can't imagine anything like this, the type of fish that we see. So for me, the first year we were up there, the weather was so bad, we had a day and a half of fishing out of the whole week. We had a blizzard on the 4th of June that first year. We went up too early. That day and a half that I got to fish convinced me I'm coming back.
Now, I have a question. I know that there's a main lodge.
Yes.
And then there are what I'm going to call satellite lodges on different lakes.
Outposts. Yes.
Outpost lodges.
Camps,
and
yes.
How do you get to those?
Well, we go to the main lodge, but Wayne has guests that choose to stay at the outpost. They have different levels of amenities. Some of the outposts you need to do your own guiding, where if you're a guest at the main lodge, you have the guides. Everyone comes in from Winnipeg on Saturday, landing on that runway that Wayne built.
So how long has he had a runway? Because I always envision everybody coming in on seaplanes. In
right.
fact, my daughter, who is a pilot, she took all the seaplane training because she was going to go up to Alaska.
Right.
And, of course, you know, that's the only place, only way that many planes.
At the first lodge, at Reindeer Lake Lodge, the only way in was by float plane. When Wayne built the North Seal River Lodge, he decided to put in an airstrip to make it easier to get a large group of people
right.
in. And it's, you know, about a mile long. It's a gravel, hard-packed, it's about a mile-long runway. And it lands a twin-engine airliner, like a Convair 580,
okay.
a big plane from Winnipeg.
Right.
Lands right on that strip, and then your transportation concerns are over. You're there. So it made it easier.
Yeah.
And it saved probably, you know, a half a day of traveling going up on Saturday. And then the following Saturday when you leave, throw your bags on the plane and you take off right from there for your flight back to Winnipeg.
Well, this is very interesting to me because, believe it or not, I remember my dad went up to Canada on a fishing trip sometime in the 1950s. So, believe it, they didn't have that kind of a lodge,
oh,
obviously.
No.
But they did use the native guides, and it was something that was put together, but those
well,
were the early days.
As we were told, this is why, you know, Wayne, when he retired from his corporate, as I recall, his corporate life, and decided to build the fishing lodge, he had been up there as a young boy with his family, with his dad. And again, when you go up there, it just grabs you. So I can understand why he wanted to make that into another career. And why to be there. And why we went back every year. And every trip was different. There were no two trips were the same. No 2 days up there are the same.
I have a question. I understand that there's something called the Canadian Grand Slam, which means you catch a pike, a trout, a walleye, and an Arctic grayling.
Right.
And have you hit the Canadian Grand Slam?
Why'd you ask that?
Pardon?
Why'd you have to ask that?
Well, because I like to hear fish stories.
No, I don't think I did. I'll tell you why. I'm not a big grayling fisherman. They're too small, but they're beautiful fish. Some of the guys like to catch them, but we're pike hunters.
What's it like to catch a pike?
We did have folks in our group that did the Grand Slam.
What's it like when a trophy pike strikes your hook?
Oh, it's amazing. I'll tell you what's interesting. The trophy pike, when you hit, you may think you snagged a log. Some of the smaller pike that are in the 35 to 40-inch range actually give you a better fight. The big ones, the lunkers, as they call them, they'll hit you hard and run. But when you pull that thing out of the water and the guide takes it and cradles it, and the guides treat these fish with great care. A 40-inch pike, 35, 40-inch pike, this fish is 25 years old. So you want these fish to live. And the guides have a cradle. They don't use a net. They have a cradle. They slide it under, and you try to guide the fish into the cradle, and they lift it out very gently. We use barbless hooks, so there's no issue hurting.
Good.
Yeah, it's all catching me, all barbless hooks. Hook comes out very easily, and we'll take a picture. And then take a picture, and then that fish goes back to be caught hopefully another day and to live another 20-some-odd years. But catching trophy fish, I mean, it's so exciting. And to see new people, and I tell you what's interesting, usually the new people that are there the first time catch trophy fish.
Oh, that's interesting.
I had a 40-inch lake trout that I said, this has got to be the fish of the day. It's got to be the trophy fish of the day. Until we got back to the lodge and found out that one of the rookies caught one that was an inch bigger.
Oh, how disappointing.
He wanted to know what the big deal was.
Oh.
What's the big deal about this? So,
well, and did you tell him how many years you've been going up there?
And it was interesting. This 40-inch lake trout that I caught was on a lake that we go to that's known for pike.
Wow. Okay. Well, now, let me ask you, do you find now that younger people are going up, or is this
Everybody's younger than us now.
Well, I meant younger. Yeah.
We've had a number of folks, you know, John particularly, who had his son there and his grandson.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. A number of the fellas have brought their kids over the years. It's a generational thing. We've seen a number of dads, sons, grandsons come up, and we have a large group. And it's a lot of our group are people that we worked with the same company over the years in different parts of the country, and sometimes the only time we got to see each other was that once a year trip. So a lot of women are there now. A lot of women fish. A lot of families.
Absolutely. I have a daughter-in-law who was the one who got my son interested in fishing. And they'll go out, you know, to Wyoming. In fact, my husband's gone out with them. They're out in Wyoming. They're all over out there doing a lot of fishing. And but she would love this trip.
Be terrific. I will tell you, we've been to two lodges that Wayne Gangler and his family run. There are a lot of things that can go wrong in that business that can put you out of business. And they've been doing this well over 30 years. Everything that you touch, if you think about this, there isn't a thing, a bar of soap in the shower, all of your food, there isn't a thing that you touch up there that didn't come in on an airplane.
Right.
The fuel for the boats. He's got a filtration system. The water that you're bathing and they're cooking with comes right out of the lake and goes through a filter. Everything that has to be done is well thought out in advance to run because you can't call for help.
Exactly. You can't run down to the grocery store.
You're 100 miles or more from the nearest road. It's this I would say to anybody that wants to go on this type of a trip to northern Canada, this is my commercial. This is the place to go.
Now, I read something very interesting on the website. In addition to the lodge and lake fishing, they also offer a trip that fascinates me to go to Churchill in Manitoba to see bears, polar bears, and the beluga whale. Now, is this Hudson Bay that they're actually going to?
We've never done that. I really can't speak to that because I don't believe that they were not doing that when we were there.
Well, the website is talking about how they also will fly you from the North Seal River Lodge to take a side trip to Churchill, which is on Hudson Bay, and there's a unique ecosystem there. It's also a big seaport. Yeah. Hudson Bay is, for the benefit of our listeners, is one of the largest saltwater bays in northern Canada. And you can see polar bears, beluga whales. I have a college friend who had the fortune or misfortune to be stationed on Churchill Bay when he was in the service, and part of his job was scaring away polar bears. I was fascinated that this trip is also something that Gangler's Lodge offers, and it might be a neat thing to do. But let's get back to fishing.
Sure.
What's the most energetic, what's the most difficult fight to land a fish that you've had? Okay. I want to hear about that.
I would say, and again, you hook a pike that's in the high 30-inch, you're going to get a good fight. To me, there's nothing like the fight of a lake trout. And the lake trout, you're normally catching by, you're trolling. And you control for hours before you hit one. A lake trout, when it hits, is going to roll around, roll itself up in your line, and run. The 40-inch lake trout that I caught took us by surprise. We were sitting, the engine in the boat wasn't running, and this fish almost spooled my reel. And we had to start the boat and actually chase this fish so that I could catch it. And it probably took us, it took 15, 20 minutes. I probably should tell you it took an hour or two. It sounds better. But
what does it take? What kind of lure bait do you use for this fish?
Lake trout, you use a lot of heavier stuff because they're usually down deep. So you're using weighted spoons, triple hooks, and again, all barbless. A guide will put your lure on the line, and he's going to take his pliers and crimp the barbs if you haven't already, so the fish aren't hurt. A lot of treble hook.
Does that make it more difficult, though, to catch
not
the
really.
Fish?
Not really. These fish, when they hit pretty hard. And again, you learn. We've all lost. Say, oh, my goodness, there's a big one. I lost it. Well, I didn't set the hook right. So probably a bit more difficult, but it's not easy for a guide to unhook a fish that has a barb.
No,
And they have
I
to
know.
Put their hands in there, too. So we don't want that to. But again, the concern is the safety of the fishery and conservation and barbless hooks are the way we go.
Well, that's great, but I think a lot of fishermen would probably question whether or not, you're going to lose a lot of fish that way.
Well, if they're good fishermen, not an issue.
Okay.
How about that, John?
What are you seeing, though, with the climate there? Has there been changing? Because I'm sorry, I've been to Alaska a few times, and you can see it in Alaska. You really can.
We've had extremes. We've had days. Again, we've had trips. We had one trip where the lake still had ice on it when we got there, and
what time of year was that?
It was in June. Our trips are in June. We had to actually do our flyouts by helicopter one year because there was not enough open water without ice for the float planes. Mm-hmm. The last couple of years, we've had some hot weather. Again, it's the summer. You can have 80-degree weather up there.
But not usually in early June.
Well, No, we started going up around the third week of June because we found any earlier you might have an issue with ice. But it could be 30 degrees in the morning, 80 degrees in the afternoon, back to 30 at night. A lot of contrast. I would say the last few years the weather was a bit warmer than we had in the early years. And again, part of that is probably because we went later. But you can get snow in June up there very easily, or you can get a late ice out when in June the lake might still be frozen for the first week or two.
Wow, that's really fascinating. I see we have our guest. Our guest hasn't met our other sports guy, John Manfreda, Joel Alpert. Good afternoon, John. Why don't you toss our stuff on the?
Good afternoon, Bill, Pat.
And pull up a chair over here. This mic's clear.
I just have to say but Joel, that I needed John
Joel, I wanted to ask: you're fishing on lures, not on live bait or anything
that.
No live bait. It's all lures and flies.
Mm-hmm.
Will they, for somebody who's a complete fishing rookie, as I call them, who wants an adventure and wants to learn? How is this lodge and their guides as far as being teachers?
Terrific. I mean, you couldn't ask for it. And again, when I went up there, I had no clue. Well, a number of the folks in our group were experienced. They taught me. But the guides, you'd be very – and by the way, the guides won't hesitate to laugh at you if you do something silly.
Really?
Yeah, they'll tell you. Big Al, if you hooked a tree, Big Al would tell you, fish in water, not in trees. But no, it's a great place to learn how to fish. You want to maybe go with someone who's more experienced. That was a value to me. And again, it was back in the early 90s was the first time I ever fished.
Now, what are the Cree like? I know a lot of the people up there are from the Cree Nation. What are they like as folks?
They're no different than us. I'll be honest with you. They're very intelligent, very resourceful, great sense of humor. When they get to know you, and we became friends with them over the years, and we had favorite guides.
Mm-hmm.
They would look forward to the week that we were going to come there because they knew they were going to have a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great.
We took good care of them. They took good care of us. I never saw a situation that these folks could not handle. And the most important thing, and aside from doing a great shore lunch, and some of them had some pretty nice recipes, they
really?
Could find fish. The number job one was finding fish for us, and they were all outstanding. At that.
So they knew the lakes, they knew the fish, they knew the habits, they knew the different species of fish.
Right.
And they also knew where they would linger at different times of the season.
Exactly right. Yep.
Now, I know that from the saltwater fishing that I've done, that different fish like different depths at different times of the year.
Right.
And is that the same thing
Absolutely.
With freshwater fish
Absolutely.
Up there?
Yeah. Yeah, based on temperature and wind conditions, they'll either be shallow in the bays or they'll be deep in the middle of the lake. As the summer progresses, it gets warmer, they go deeper.
Now, how do the guides know where to look and when to look?
They live there. It's just it's instinctual.
It's their job.
Yeah, and again, absolutely, that's their livelihood. The interesting thing about these folks is they can navigate a lake that they've never been on. Sometimes we'll go to, Wayne would always treat us to opening a new lake that no one's been to before.
That's exciting.
It is. It really is. And the guides can, these lakes, that whole part of Canada was glacial millions of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There are eskers, which are large hills. They almost look man-made. They're big
like
hills.
Sand dunes.
Yes. Okay. Pushed up millions of years ago by glaciers. Large boulders in the lake that sometimes protrude up to through the surface of the water. You got to be careful. And the guides can navigate by the current. They can navigate around. We've never had an incident. One little incident in 1998, we hit a rock. I went in first into the
water. That happens. That happened to me off sailboats.
But they know these waters, and they can – you and I could go out, you know, a half a mile and get lost and wouldn't find our way back. These fellas could take you 20, 30 miles from the lodge and never hesitation. You know, they know where they're going.
I understand. Are there different, will they teach you different techniques for different fish?
Sure.
And tell me about that. Tell me how that works.
You know, again, we, if the water's clear and we're pike fishing, you can sight cast, which is kind of an acquired skill. You have to have the right sunglasses. It's a lot of fun because you can see them. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy to catch them. There's one lake where they sit on the bottom of this bay in clear water. You can almost reach in with your hand and grab them, and they're very hard to catch. Lake trout, best way to catch them is, as I said, trolling. And they can go very deep, so you need to add weight to your lines. Some of the boats have fish finders. A lot of the guides don't like to use them, but they're there. And I think probably the best technique, as anybody could tell you who's fished any length of time, is patience.
Well, that's always the difficult
fishing,
thing.
Not catching.
That's why it's fishing, exactly.
Right.
And do different lures work at different times of the season?
Well, again, we're there mainly in the warm weather. I'll be honest with you.
I'm talking about warm, sunny days afternoon
colors,
or cloudy days, rain.
Question. Clear, sunny day, you want to use something shiny like silver. As it gets cloudy, maybe go to a gold or a red. Some of the old, anybody listening that knows freshwater fishing, the Five of Diamonds is one of these old standard spoons that we've been using for years that always worked. And then there's the, I don't know if you're familiar with the MEPS spinners, different size spinners with a treble hook, always very effective. But yes, mm-hmm. Sunny, clear weather, shiny. If it's cloudy, darker colors, gold, red, blue.
Now, having made this trip 20 times or more,
right.
How do you prepare for it? What do you pack? What do you know you're going to need? And what don't you need?
And down somewhere in my basement, there's a checklist.
Yep. Well, let's hear about that.
Well, let me tell you the first thing. You want to make sure you've got good rain gear, and you never leave the lodge without that rain gear in your bag on the boat because you never can tell. You want long underwear even in June. And as I got older, I put that long underwear on every day, even on the days when it was warm. You'll have to have your warm undergarments. You'd have to have warm socks, you have to have gloves, you have to have a hat, you have to have great rain gear. And over the years, I didn't need the checklist anymore. It was kind of second nature. You don't need to bring a lot of clothes, just a couple of shirts, maybe one or two pairs of pants. Good boots, getting in and out of the boat often in
waterproof
water.
Boots, obviously,
waterproof boots.
Yep.
Absolutely.
What brand, by the way, what brand of waterproof boots do you use? Because I'm looking for a pair right now.
And you know something?
I'll be going to L.L. Bean and Cabela's.
I'm going to tell you, well, Cabela's, their stock went up the month before our trip.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
So most of my stuff came from Cabela's. And my rain gear is Helly Hansen.
I have Helly Hansen reindeer gear, too.
Yeah.
I think that's the best.
Absolutely.
It's a Norwegian company.
It is.
Helly Hansen rain gear is what I use on my sailboat. I also have a number of their shirts and a number of their swimsuits because they design them specifically to be quick dry, to wick the moisture away from you on a sweaty day.
Mm-hmm.
I find them very comfortable. And I don't know if they make boots, though.
I don't think so, but I've got, you know, Cabela's, you know, boots for years. I've been probably 25 years old.
So what else do you have to take with you? Your rods, your reels, your lures?
I'll tell you what's interesting. We had we used to carry all our stuff, and then we got smart, and we started shipping it up ahead of us.
Well, they'll store it for you, I bet.
And then we said, you know something, we're going to be back next year, so let's ask Wayne, and he always accommodated us. And we stored all our stuff so that the only thing you were bringing after a number of years was just your duffel bag, you know, with your clothing. And you've got to have several rods because you never can tell, you might break one.
I'd like to break in for 1 second and give everybody the Gangler's Lodge website, which I think is www.ganglers.com/home. And you can reach Gangler's by calling 1-866-51-LODGE. So much for the commercial, but let's continue.
Sure.
What else do you bring?
Well, let me... You got to bring some good booze.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, if you're going to bring anything.
You got to bring some good. Well, I'm a Scotch man.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you.
Unless I'm in the Caribbean when it's rum.
Well, you want to, when we're in the lodge at night for our meeting, Wayne has a beautifully stocked bar. But in our cabin, you know, if you want to have a good drink, come on over to Cabin One. Everything will be gone by Wednesday. You'll be drinking Vitalis by Wednesday. But we started going up, again, you learn a little different thing. We started going up a day early. So we'd go up on Thursday, stay in Winnipeg Thursday, go out to dinner, there's a beautiful Cabela's in Winnipeg, go hang out there.
No shock about that.
But go to a liquor store, do a liquor run. No reason to carry it because had a couple incidents with the customs people that go through your bag. Not always a good experience, but so I buy a bottle or whatever for the cabin in Winnipeg before we fly up. I got to tell you, it's probably, to me, it's the most civilized place on earth. You can sit in the lodge, put your feet up, have a drink, light a cigar if that's what you like to do, and no one's going to tell you that you're bad company.
That's good to hear. What about the... What about the lodge itself? I know there's some great pictures on the website, and I'll give it again, www.ganglers.com. But what's a night like at the lodge? You've come off the river from fishing, you go back to your cabin, you take a shower, you dress. What are the dinners like there? I've heard it's four-star.
The dinners are
four or five-star.
The dinners are outstanding. Whether it's, you know, steak or ribs, Wayne always had a gourmet chef, so you're never going to leave the table hungry. After dinner, as I said, we do our meeting, and that's going to probably take about, you know, 2 hours.
Where what happens at those meetings, other than a lot of drinking and bragging?
Well, that too. we call it, I'll clean it up, we call it liar's hour. But we talk about what we caught during the day. We talk about what we caught it on.
Well, it's interesting, Pat. I arrived and they're already talking about food. An Italian guy arrives and they talk about food. I think that's just great.
Yeah, but
we have to eat.
Problem
you gotta
is
eat.
You'd have to go fishing. And it sounds wonderful.
Oh, it sounds like you're talking about some great place to eat. Are you talking about cooking the fish you catch?
Well, we do.
No. But in Manitoba, John.
Yeah, at the lodge. At the lodge.
Manitoba.
Yeah.
In which galaxy is that? The
way
Milky
north.
Way?
No, it's way
Canada.
Up north. But so after dinner, we do our meeting. And it's important because we compare notes. And as I said, as the week progresses and maybe the weather changes, we start to see patterns in color, which color lures are the most effective, the size. And then we ask whether anything goofy went on in anybody's boat, because we have another award. I'll talk about some of the awards we gave out.
Bill, this is a family show.
No,
our boundaries.
No, we're good.
Talking
we're good.
About lures and colors and funny things in the boat. I didn't realize fishing could be so exciting.
Fishing is exciting. You have to tell me.
After all.
I'm telling you, it's like nothing else. But we have an award we would give out to at the end of the week to the fisherman that did the goofiest thing during the week. We call it the Malinke Award. I'm not going to go into where the name came from.
What's the most unusual winner of that award?
Well,
what did they do?
Okay. Well, I know John wants to hear this story, but there was one fellow.
I love a good fish
story.
Yeah,
there was one fellow who cast his whole rod and reel into the lake.
Well,
now that's not why he got
cast
the award.
It as in
it's gone. It's gone. Yeah, it's gone.
He was
no,
trying to cast it.
No,
slipped out of his
no,
hand.
No, it's gone.
It was an intentional.
No, it wasn't intentional. No, it wasn't intentional.
Well, okay,
no,
that's what I'm trying
he
to clarify.
He just lost his grip. And
yeah,
he
cast it.
Now he
right.
he got the award not because he did that, but because he came back and told everybody.
He actually admitted he owned up to it.
Now there was one fellow also, and this was probably the best one. And again, I know it's a family show, but we had one fellow that had to take medicine that didn't agree with him. And we're all coming on shore for shore lunch. There's probably about 25 guys, and we see him up at the top of the hill with his pants around his ankles doing some kind of a crazy, looked like a dance. And we didn't realize that he was ill and had the ill effect.
You're on a fishing trip.
Yes.
Are there any mermaids?
No, 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 no mermaids. And anyway, he's dancing around, and he had relieved himself and dropped his camera in it. And he's picking his camera up with his pants around his ankles, and he got the Malinke Award that year. So, John, I told John I might not be permitted to tell that story, but I did. But
we sanitized it sufficiently.
We had a fellow one time decided to jump in the water with chest waders on, and the chest waders filled up, and he almost drowned.
Oh my gosh!
We don't want anybody getting hurt. We don't give that award out for for accidents. But we had two very special awards. If you just let me describe them, the guides up there are very competitive with each other. They want to catch fish. They want to put us on fish. And there are guides that love, like Big Al, love northern pike. We had a guide named Napoleon, who was a great lake trout fisherman. Mm. So we would give, we had a plaque engraved every year, and we would give the guide that caught the biggest pike the Big Al Award, and we would give the Napoleon Award to the guide that caught the biggest lake trout. And we'd have them come in the lodge, and we'd present them with an envelope, and their name went on this plaque that still hangs on the wall, to my knowledge, in the lodge. And they loved it because they like to compete with each other. Who's the best guide? Who caught the most fish? And you can catch easily, 100 fish in a day up there.
Wow.
Not all trophy size, but you can catch easily 100 fish in a day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the waters up there are just but indescribable. But none of it would happen without the resourcefulness of our guides.
Well, Joel, let me ask you. I think you said that Wayne is now in Florida.
Well, he lives in Florida. He's got a lot of money.
So
he's in Florida all year. No, he'll be back up at the lodge in May.
Well, that was my question.
Oh, yeah,
they don't do anything in the winter?
No,
they don't do any ice fishing up there?
No, you can't do anything up there in the winter except some of the guides.
Except shiver.
The older ones used to trap in the winter. Big Al used
to.
And he would actually sleep in the snow with his sled dogs.
Because
that's an older generation. That's
I was going to say, that's a diehard.
No, the fishing season up there, by September, the weather starts to get pretty severe.
Well, except that I'm from Wisconsin, and so they did ice fishing all winter.
This is not like Wisconsin. Trust me.
Sounds like Wisconsin is still part of civilization compared to Manitoba.
There's no ice. The lakes up there get so frozen, you're not going to ice fish. You could drive a tractor trailer across the lake. It's like that show, Ice Road Truckers.
Road Truckers.
Yeah, they don't do. There's no ice fishing going on up
so
there.
So they couldn't get.
No.
It would be that.
No, you're
the ice
you're
be
out
that
of there
deep.
by September. You're out of there, and Wayne goes back up in the spring. And when we get there in June, it's like it's an old home week.
What kind of hosts are the Ganglers?
Wonderful people.
Yeah.
And again, we've got to know them. They're part of our group. We're part of their family. It's just a great relationship. We kid Wayne because Wayne's a great salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And he can sell a fly out with the best of them. But it adds to the experience up there. You don't want to stay on the main lake. You want to get on a float plane and go somewhere else.
Well, but also, you're not going to get tourists up there. For the most part, it would be good people that go up there. I mean, you're not going to get some
no, all good
jerks.
People. And we're fortunate for most of our trips. The lodge can accommodate about 26 fishermen. we've been able to fill it almost every year with our own people. So we kind of take over the
whole. So you take over the lodge for your
tour. Which makes it a lot of fun.
I understand that many of these lodges will deliberately keep the number of guests small so that everybody has a good experience.
Oh, I don't know what the other lodges do or what you would consider small, but I guess 24, 25 people here is optimal. With the facility on the fishing on the main lake and then the flyouts to other lakes so that no one lake gets overly fished. And we disperse and go off, and again, to catch different fish.
Now, I know John's had this experience, but I haven't. What's it like to land and take off on a float plane?
Oh, I'll be honest with you. I'd rather fly with those guys than an airliner.
Why is that?
They're great pilots. I took off. I was on a flyout one time, and again, you're on a lake. You got to get back. Weather turned. It was a smaller plane. It was a Cessna 185, and there was two fishermen and two guides and a pilot, and we took off in the middle of a thunderstorm. I never flew in a plane like that in the middle of a thunderstorm, but this guy got us back to where we had to be and safely. They're very landing on a lake. It's a smooth. It's firm, but it's smooth, and it's the first time you do it. You're kind of a little intimidated.
No question, Joe. What Bill was referring to is I was in Vancouver 2 years ago, and they
is that in Canada?
That's a part of Western Canada, and they have a lake up there with a number of small planes, yes, as you put it. This was not a Cessna. It was a little bit bigger. It had about 8, 10, 12 people in it.
Yeah, well, we fly the Twin Otters also up there that hold about 12 people.
And the to your point, that first flight was somewhat intimidating.
Yeah. It's a different experience.
Not so much the takeoff. Mm-hmm. It's the landing. You're coming down, and you're looking right at water,
right,
and you're coming down at angle,
well,
of course.
That's when gravity takes over. You know, it does happen.
And, yeah, and you're looking, and you know it's water.
Yeah.
It's not concrete,
yep,
and, you know, you hit that first bounce, and you're bouncing up and down.
I'm going to tell you about – I'm going to tell you a real quick story. My first flyout, the first year that we were up at Reindeer Lake, and we – like I said, we were – in the lodge until Thursday because of weather. Thursday night, Wayne came in and said, we're going to start doing flyouts at 5 o'clock. You can go out and fish. Can't promise that we're going to be able to come get you. Who's going? Well, I went with a good friend of mine and a guide. We went to another lake, and we're fishing, and it's getting dark. You know, it's starting to get dark. It's a little bit earlier in the summer that first year. And one of the guides finally said, I hear the plane. I said, I don't hear anything. And, well, they have much better hearing. He said, the plane's coming. And we see lights coming through the darkness, and it was the smaller float plane at that time. And the pilot said, leave your stuff, get on board. I got to get back. They're not allowed to fly after dark up there. Very
so
difficult.
They were actually coming up on the water.
Yeah, yeah.
So at some point you could hear the propellers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were sailing up to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There they were.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing.
So this is my first flyout, and we're flying back, and it's dark. This time of year had gotten dark fairly, you know, early. And John was at the lodge being concerned because here's Joel's first fishing trip, his first flyout, and I got to tell his wife, Beverly, that I lost him. And all of a sudden I see like a light moving back and forth on the dock by the lodge, and it was John with a flashlight back and forth so that the plane could see. And I have to tell you, I've got a picture of myself getting off this plane in the dark. And that was on that first flyout flying back to the lodge. I fell asleep. These guys
really?
Yeah, I fell asleep on the yep.
Yeah, good pilots.
These guys, They're mostly young. They're very good. They're very, again, the folks up there are very resourceful people. And
yes,
never,
in general. Yeah.
And Wayne, his first concern is his guests' comfort, safety, never an issue.
Right. Well, I think, although this was different than what you've done, I think one of the best flights, or the most exciting flights I've done, is flying and landing on a glacier up in Alaska.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that was...
Oh, you got to... You got to put your feet out and make sure you stop.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and I mean,
I never did that. No, yeah.
Well, I've snowmobiled on a glacier.
Okay,
that I have done. That was also part of my Vancouver trip. We went up into the mountains, and glaciers are intimidating things, Pat.
Well, I mean, it's really exciting to fly over the glaciers and then able to land. And I know my daughter, who, you know, did the seaplane training and the float. Can fly all those planes, and she said that was also fun flying, you know, for the pilot.
It's part of the, I always considered, you know, our float plane trips, you know, part of the adventure, part of the enjoyment, part of the experience. And again, to describe this trip to anyone who's never done it before is very hard to do. That's why I always bring pictures, and that doesn't tell the story. Just
well. From the pictures I've seen, you certainly don't rough it up there.
Oh, it's great. No, listen, you know, we'll
go in style.
Yeah,
we'll
rough it during the day, but when we come back at night, we don't want to rough it. No, we want to have a good dinner and sleep in a clean bed in a nice cabin and
I've got a question.
Hang out with good friends.
Why do they call it the land of the little sticks up there?
The land of the little sticks?
Yep.
I'm guessing that's the trees, you have a very short growing season up there. You don't see large, lush pine trees. They're tall, thin, and spindly because the growing season is very short.
Not only that, Joel, but if you're in Canada, and Bill, you've been up there a lot more than I have, but I remember going up to Montreal one time, and a bad storm had come through like 3 years before that. And it just leveled a forest for like 50 miles of driving on 87 or whatever route we were on up at that point. It was like somebody came in with a big machete and just cut them right down. And all you had was stumps.
Well, we've seen it was interesting. One year we were up there during a forest fire. And we were...
That has to be scary.
We were fishing... Where you could hear the saws, you could see the water bombers taking off and coming down. You could smell the smoke. We weren't in any danger. We were on the lake, but you could smell the smoke. The smoke would sometimes drift into camp from maybe 50 miles away, depending upon the wind direction. And the following year, a year later, you go back to the same spot, and there are green sprouts.
Wow.
Renewing itself, the woods renewing itself within a year. And that's, to me, the most remarkable thing was the nature. You could be on a lake, you could get out of the boat, walk on the shore, walk. I would do it every lake I went to. I would walk 50 yards in because I'm walking on ground that no one ever set foot on before, very likely. And we're on water that never been fished before.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's quite a place to experience.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left for our sports guys tonight.
I got about two more hours of stuff to talk.
Well, then we'll have to have you come back.
You want to come back and talk? Well,
I've never on the radio before. This is new to me, but I've been told by many people that I have a perfect face for radio.
Oh well, we all do.
You're stealing my line.
Yeah. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we give another shout out to Ganglers?
Sure.
www.ganglers.com. The lodge up in northern Manitoba in the North Seal River region. Hopefully we will get some of our listeners checking out the Ganglers website and hopefully contacting the Ganglers, because it sounds like a wonderful experience.
How many members do you have, Joe?
Well, we had different folks over the years. There were two of us. You hadn't weren't here when I introduced it, but the gentleman that I worked with for many years, John Cranert, he's listening. He's down in Florida with his family. John put this together in 1992. He and I were the only two that went on every trip 23 times. We went, and as we, you know, different folks got older, maybe dropped out. Different people didn't make it back. There was a fairly regular group of
the same people, and then always a few newcomers that joined our group. But at any given time, there's probably any year, you know, 24, 25 of us.
Very nice. Very impressive. It's a nice legacy, too, because as your membership matures, you can try to bring in new blood to the group and continue that legacy.
Yeah, and for the most part, none of us ever matured, but that's a different story.
Are there a lot of people who bring their kids?
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a number. You know, John has his son, again, who's a doctor in North Carolina, and his son, John the Third, and then Uncle George, who, again, John's brother, we unfortunately lost him, his son, his grandson. There were a number of other, you know, folks who brought kids, and, you know, legacy continues over the years.
Well, what's really amazing, now, I grew up in Wisconsin, and we all fished on the river, but that's another. But I have a grandson, and out of the blue, I mean, he loves to fish. I mean, he goes fishing all the time. We were in Wisconsin at a pack. Everybody knows I'm a diehard Packers fan. Anyway, I had him out there. We were all out there for a Packers game, and we went to one of the sports, you know, big sports club. Well, he found a fishing rod, and he made sure, Dave and I were driving, so he made sure that the guy went out and measured our vehicle to see if we could fit this fishing rod in so we could bring this fishing rod back to New Jersey because he didn't think he could find anything like it. But isn't that interesting? To me, that's really interesting. You know, he doesn't have a father who really is interested in fishing, and yet he just would be
in the blood, Pat.
You know,
I
never fished until I was in my early 40s. These fellows that I worked with taught me how to fish.
You know what I noticed, and it was very interesting, Gengler's has won one of the coveted endorsements in fishing, and that's from Orvis. Orvis has endorsed Gengler's North Seal River Lodge with the with 5 stars for the quality of its experience.
Well earned.
I'm not surprised, given everything you've said to me, and I see the picture of the lodge from the air. It looks like a beautiful place.
It is God's country.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
What else would you like to tell our listeners about the Gengler's that we haven't talked about?
You know,
yet?
I would just, and again,
well, how often do you meet, Joe? I mean, tell us a little bit about the membership structure.
We've not been up for a couple of years. A couple of our folks, you start to get aches and pains, and it can be a little physically challenging. But you know, some of the folks that went on this trip, we only saw once a year. Now, I have a very good friend, Frankie Lawton, who I worked with for many years back in the day. He moved for business reasons, to North Dakota and stayed there. And, you know, I would only see Frankie on the trip after we worked together many years. Maybe I'd only see him once a year or every other year when he came. There was a continuity that made the whole thing over the years very special. You know, with a lot of us.
That sounds great.
And we're all, none of us are getting any younger.
Well, it's a little after 6.
Okay.
Joel Alpert, I want to thank you for coming on and
thanks
telling
for
us
having
about
me.
Anchor Lodge. And
we will need a return visit.
I'll
Joel.
Be back. I have another.
Okay. For the other, the remaining 2 hours of your presentation.
Well, I got 30 more pages.
Really,
you see these
enjoy,
pictures. They're amazing.
We really enjoy you coming back.
I love
you know
talking
what?
About it.
We're going to end.
Thank you.
If they don't rewind, we'll play some commercials because this has been the first commercial-free.
There you
and
go.
We're not going to tell the chamber, but I'm sure all our sponsors would understand. So, bye, folks. We'll see you next week.
We will see you next week.
Get up off that couch and think about heading up to Anglers.
Go fishing.
We have to think of something because those of us who are football, diehard football fans, are going through withdrawal.
Never let
you're
life
stuck
interfere
with the XFL
with
right now.
Or football.
Well, folks, get up off that couch. It's Bill Wolfson wishing you a great evening, great weekend. Joel Alpert,
and happy Valentine's Day.
Yes. Happy Valentine's Day. The greatest Valentine's gift for your husband, a trip to Anglers.
And remember, all of you guys out there listening, you know what? This is
it's not too late to go get flowers.
Or something. Or for the husband, you know, or wife, I can see that my son should be getting his wife this trip. because she's a diehard Fisher person. Bye-bye.
If they can build the sets at all. Now you can purchase 20 certified brilliant uncirculated Morgan Silver dollars from Finest Known and receive this 21st coin for only $1. Call today and receive this Morgan dollar book for free. Take advantage of this introductory offer and give us a call today at Finest Known. Once you hold one of these beautiful uncirculated sets of Morgan dollars in your hands, history just comes alive. Call Finest Known today.
Don't fear technology.